Sunshine giving way to increasing clouds this afternoon, 44 to 48, mostly cloudy tonight, 32 to 36. Becoming partly sunny, milder tomorrow, low to mid-50s, and on Wednesday, mostly sunny, breezy, much colder, 30 to 35, and sunny, cold, 35 Thursday. Partly sunny on Friday with a high near 45, and more clouds, afternoon showers on Saturday. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwoman, and that's your Weather Center forecast from 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Every Tuesday morning at 9, the curtain goes up on Center Stage with Pamela Kuhn, focusing on arts and entertainment. Pamela searches for the artist's creative journey and interviews guests ranging from singers, musicians, dancers, actors, visual artists, and authors. It's the show about the artists and their craft and the personal stories that make up their incredible lives. That's Center Stage every Tuesday morning at 9 on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com. Anywhere. The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome to the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH, presented by the Greenwich Sentinel Foundation.
Good afternoon, Greenwich. This is Beth O'Malley here on Be Well with Beth at 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. And I am here this afternoon with Stephanie Marcassano. She is the founder of the Harris Project, and we will be talking this afternoon around co-occurring disorders, mental health, disorders that include both mental health and substance abuse together, that it's not one or the other, but that they're co-occurring. The first thing I want to just make note of is that Stephanie has been instrumental in putting together a program, and that's actually how we first met. So welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, Beth. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. We met about a year ago when we had Scooter Braun here in town at Stress Success and Teenage Setbacks, and there was a second one. I would say, was it last fall?
It was October, November, Stress, right. Success, Teenage Setbacks, Mental Health, Let's Talk.
That's right. And that's where there were several students got up and told their stories. And I was blessed to hear you tell your personal story on that day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What I'm going to do today in our interview is we're going to be talking about the clinical issues, but I'm also going to be asking you some of those personal questions about why it is that you're in this position. And I'll talk to the audience now just a little bit about your history. You're basically a mom.
I am.
And a fairly local mom. You're from the other side of the tracks, the New York side, in Ardsley. And I always say that because our Rob here is from the New York side as well.
Representing the 845 right here.
914.
That's right. I used to be a 914.
In terms of the what you've brought to our town, to Greenwich, is just incredible, and that's really what I want our viewers to know. Your energy coming in with the Harris Project program, as well as introducing CODA, which is the Co-Occurring Disorders Awareness student-driven effort, and that really came out of Greenwich High School, as I understand it, correct?
That it did. So where do you want me to start, Beth? Beginning?
Well, let me just I want to announce the program that's coming up on Tuesday, April 4th, because you've done so much work and been so instrumental in putting that together. And that is from 6 to 8 p.m. at Arch Street. So it is the third official Stress Success and Teenage Setbacks workshop. This one, each one has a different focus. And you work very closely with Kathy Steiner over at Greenwich High School Wellness Program. And this one is Mind, Body, and Sport, Understanding the Student Athlete Event, Understanding the Student Athlete. And you have several speakers lined up for that. So if you could just make mention to that to start.
Oh, sure. So the first speaker is actually Michael Ahern. He himself is a 25-year-old young man who is currently a lacrosse coach. He lost his college scholarship to play sports due to substance use issues. And so he's going to talk about his recovery and the sort of mindset of being a student athlete and the stresses and pressures that come along with that. Then we've got Dr. Paul Sethi, who's an orthopedic surgeon. He's going to be talking about athletes and injury, talking about what happens if you have an injury and then you're prescribed medication. You know, can you become addicted to the medication? Is your self-esteem struggling because you're no longer playing or you're taking a break from playing and that's how you identify? So he's going to bring the perspective of what families need to watch out for, how students can sort of protect themselves, what coaches need to look out for. And then Pete Fella, who's the athletic trainer at Greenwich High School, he's going to round out the group to really talk about what they see with their student athletes, personality, you know, traits, what kind of, you know, kid might get into trouble, what, how they can support each other. It used to be the thought was if you play sports, you're safe. Now, unfortunately, you know, a lot of the stresses and pressures that come along with that, together with injury, together with thinking that you're going to be playing in college, brings a whole different component to this. And I'm really fortunate and excited because this is not really my area of expertise, but I was asked to moderate the event. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Terrific, terrific. You know, in October, I was so impressed to see, yet again, such a huge turnout for this event. And the event is interesting because you're really catering towards both the adults of our community, parents, adults, but also to the teens and the youth. And so the speakers are set up in a way to both offer information and education, but also to entertain. And it was fascinating, the last program in October, where you had a young man from the high school who was up and he did a open rap,
right.
Open mic
Dexter,
rap.
Yes.
Yeah, he did a great job. It was really incredible to see that. And then you moved into having one of the teens at the high school share her own personal struggle of depression.
Right.
And, of course, then there was a gentleman who shared his own personal struggles.
Correct.
With mental health. And then you had a chance to share your story. And what I'd like to do is just set the stage for you now. So you were, in your career, you are an attorney.
I'm an attorney who had not practiced for a long time. So I was really more, you know, if you're thinking about what kind of mom was I, PTA president, then I was on the school board. When you move into conversations about my son, which we'll get into in a minute, we'll talk about how I had to resign from the school board. And so, you know, all of those things kind of come into play. But if you wanted to get like the vision of who I am, yeah, I'm the mom that kind of stayed home but got super involved in everything.
Exactly. And so you still really, you bring that energy to everything you do. And that's why, you know, I think from the minute I met you, we connected so much because you have so much to give to youth and parents in our community and throughout the area. And I know you're reaching out beyond just the borders of Connecticut, but you're into New York, and the hope is to pursue this even further.
Right.
You're certified as a youth mental health first aid instructor, and you really work towards education.
Right. So, starting at the beginning of who I am and where I am. So I have two children. My son Harris would have been 23 on April 8th. My daughter Jensen is 20. Harris died of an accidental overdose when he was 19. So yes, so things have not really been so easy. So for all of my energy and exuberance, there's a real story here to tell. So for me, Harris struggled with anxiety from the time he was 3. He was diagnosed with ADHD when he was in 8th grade after he began experimenting with marijuana. Then we got him evaluated and started seeing a different team of therapists. You know, originally when he was experimenting with marijuana, that's what we were told it was. You see, nobody really talked to us about the link between mental health and substance use.
Right.
And so Harris really had no idea sort of the course he would have set himself on when mm-hmm. that began. So he started, you know, getting things together. 9th, 10th, and 11th grade were actually really good. He was treated for ADHD. He went on medication. He kind of started living a typical life. I don't like using the word normal. It was just he was sort of typical. But he had stopped seeing his therapist because he was feeling so good.
Yes.
Now, what happens in 11th grade? ACTs, SATs, the stress, the pressure. We live in a very small town. He was feeling really good about himself. But then the weight of leaving and moving on and kind of getting beyond that, the anxiety really came back full force. And so he took pills at a party, the way, you know, you think about, oh, I'm a teenager, that's what I'm supposed to do. And that started him really on the path to death.
Do you know at this point if he was, when he took the pills, if they were the benzos or what category of medication that was?
I'm really not sure. I mean, there were benzos, opioids. You know, as far as I'm concerned, and what will come to the conclusion, like, as we go talking, is for me, heroin and opioids are all sort of end results of years of struggling and really a lack of recognition of how many people struggle with mental health before they get to the
underlying issues.
And so, you know, So here I am. So Harris, so in 11th grade it starts, the pill use starts. He pulls it together a little bit here and there, but by mid-12th grade he went into rehab for the first time. Every program he went into, and you hear about this from parents, you know, my kid went into rehab, oh, they went in again, and everybody's like, why aren't they getting it right? Each program said that they could address what he had, and what he had is co-occurring disorders. They all said that they could deal with the whole puzzle and help him figure it out, but they always led with the substances, and then he would get out of a program, he would relapse, it would start again, because they weren't getting to the heart of what drove him to the substances to begin with.
Exactly. And even as, you know, for parents, it's extraordinarily frustrating, but even for us professionals, it's the same thing. When we have a client in front of us and we know that they need an inpatient or an extended stay, we're searching and looking for what program is truly going to address the underlying anxiety disorder, the underlying depressive bipolar disorder. And unless, and most places will tell you, oh, we have a psychiatrist on staff, don't worry about that. But then it boils down to maybe they're seeing once a week or once.
Harris saw in the first program, he saw the psychologist once every other week in a 28-day program. So that was twice in 28 days. And he would say, you know, the groups aren't really helping me. I need to figure out what's going on. And so, you know, then the next sort of step in that program would have been a new psychologist in even less time. It would have been once a month. So, you know,
and just to stop you for a moment, when you're saying psychologist, MD psychiatrist who can prescribe?
Right. No, okay. I'm talking psychologist. So the psychiatrist was a whole nother ballgame. Most programs, you don't even see a psychiatrist because they don't believe in medication at all, no matter what your diagnosis is.
Now, with a co-occurring disorder, it's crucial to have the psychiatric component, be it nurse practitioners who are psychiatrically trained, mm-hmm. but most importantly, to have a medical director who is hands-on, where there's good psychiatric care. And that's what our parents really need to look for. And,
right. Yeah. So I just want to, you know, I know that you've got listeners out there, and I think that most of them are probably sort of scratching their heads and thinking, how come I've never heard of co-occurring disorders? And so I want to kind of like set the stage for people to understand that 9.2 million Americans meet the criteria for a diagnosis. They say 70% or more of all people who misuse substances have a mental health challenge or disorder, psychiatric disorder, trauma, traumatic brain injury. Yet when you go in for treatment, the model doesn't address that. So that leads me to, Harris was in a program down in Florida, you know, fast forwarding. He's now 19. He is discharged from the program and he is put into a hotel. This is the first program that he's discharged from for use of substances. They put him in a hotel because they don't really know where else to put him. They've done it before and it's worked. And my son died by overdose at that hotel. We have his computer. We saw that he was looking to see how much of that substance he could safely take. He died on a Wednesday. Between Wednesday and Sunday, it was long. His funeral was Sunday. It was a long time. His friends were all sophomores in college. People wanted to come home. And everybody who comes into your house in a small town says, where do you want donations? Everybody wants to know what to do for you.
Right.
And I said, you know, co-occurring disorders, what, like, don't just, you know, make some donation to a substance use program or a mental health program. I really want to know where this went wrong. And truth be told, it was as chaotic as you can imagine my house would be. My daughter was a senior in high school. It was really bad. But somehow I had clarity in that I really needed to understand where this went wrong. And so just like a kid would be doing a research paper, I sat at my kitchen table with all of these people in my house and I figured out that there were no organizations for people with co-occurring disorders and mm-hmm. that I needed to do something really proactive to get out of bed every day and make a difference, which is how the Harris Project started.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what's so fascinating about that is that your investment in this program and in spreading word and educating both parents, educators, as well as children has done more than many professionals have done in their lifetimes. And I think that we as a community in the substance abuse field can't thank you enough for bringing this to the forefront. What I wanted to ask you, just a few questions in that I know our listeners may have. How many different rehab facilities had or attempts at rehab had your son had at that point?
Okay, so he was inpatient in a mental health sort of ward for a week at the beginning. Then he went into an inpatient rehab program that said that they were co-occurring capable. At the end of that 28 days, he came home. He was just finishing up his senior year in high school. He was homeschooled for the very ends of the year, went to graduation, went to prom, but had relapsed within 2 weeks. When he came home, he started seeing a psychiatrist and a psychologist who were supposedly experts in co-occurring disorders. Yet once he relapsed with them, they didn't even have the next place to send him. We basically patched him together for the rest of that sort of summer. Things got really bad in the fall. He went into an outpatient program, which started going well. And then there was an influx of kids from drug court, and they started doing the tests for him and giving him substances, which started us into a really bad place. Then he went down to Florida for the first time. That was really rough. We went to parent programming, and, you know, unless you've been there, you don't know what it looks like. I don't think that a parent of a child that has cancer could imagine that a child who has a mental health and substance use issue would be put in the middle of the room, and your goal was to tell them how much of what they did to your family was their fault, like blaming them, shaming them, calling them an addict. And we really...
So not put, supportive
it
family
was not,
work.
It was not designed to build bridges. It was really designed to put the burden on a young person who was struggling.
Yeah.
After he left that program, we were told that he needed the toughest of tough love programs. And so he went to a place upstate in New York. And he was the only young person, I think, who wasn't in a gang. He made a lot of strong ties there because after he died, they all reached out to me because they were out of the program by then. Their Facebook page had Harris's picture on it.
Sure.
And it was rough there, but it went well because they had a lot of positive parent programs. The
Great.
Thing,
okay.
the trouble happened when you could have visitors and other young people had visitors who brought in substances, and Harris started taking substances, so he couldn't stay in that program. So things, you know, he kept bopping around, but they would never get to the mental health piece.
Right.
And then finally, he went down to a program in Florida, again, second time in Florida, that was supposed to have mental health, substance use, socialization, and college. And nothing made him prouder than starting college, you know, as a freshman, a year deferred, and getting things rolling. But unfortunately, and they were very honest, it was a relatively new program, they fell short on the psych piece.
Yeah.
So when Harris ultimately died by overdose, it wasn't, you know, when you want to know whose fault it is, you know, I could point fingers every which way. The thing that troubled me the most was that programs would tell us that he had a shot for success when if they didn't deal with the mental health piece, they never would.
Right.
And that's really where, you know, you talk about the work that I do with kids and parents and families and communities, but this really started as my goal being integrating treatment, taking the mental health side and the substance use side. You know, I don't know how it is in Connecticut, but in New York State, so you have for everybody, just so you get a little education on this, there's the federal government, which has an organization called SAMHSA. SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration. And when I heard about them, I thought, these are my people. They deal with both at the same time. What I quickly learned is that every state regulates its own budgets and committees and organizations on mental health and substance use. So in New York State, you have the Office of Mental Health, which gets like a couple of billion dollars, and the Office of Alcohol and Substance Use Services, which gets like $679 million. Two separate agencies, two separate administrations. So once you check substances on that OMH side, they move you into a substance program, but they're not integrated. So the first thing I did was I started working with Westchester, Putnam, and Orange counties with OASIS and OMH and all the agencies and organizations, and SAMHSA was at the table with us to start integrating treatment. Well, that's a huge nut. That's
mm-hmm.
a lot to take on,
mm-hmm.
and that's not fast moving. And so I thought, every day while I'm waiting for integration to happen, there are young people who are making decisions to try substances, not recognizing that experimentation is not a rite of passage, that with the developing brain, a whole bunch of things can happen, like co-occurring disorders. So I truly created a program where it's not like the grieving mom holding my son's picture and crying, because that gets an empathetic response. I'm not like the guy who gets up and tells the jokes about his friends who were screw-ups in high school. I'm not like the lights and multimedia around the car crashes and excitement. I truly go in and I talk to kids about how common mental health issues are. They don't know that between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 young people are diagnosed with a mental health issue with severe impact in a given year.
Right.
Nobody's telling them.
Right.
And, you know, people are like, you shouldn't tell them, it'll scare them. I'm like, scaring you is feeling like you're alone.
Well, and that's the whole piece about being in the schools and being that hands-on, is that a child then who's suffering alone without sharing with anyone is hearing that there are plenty of other kids who can relate, and there's lots of help out there, which is, you know, so crucial to their own development. And many of the referrals that we as private practitioners get are because a child went to their parents maybe 2, 3, 4 times saying, I'd really like to see a therapist, and the parents aren't necessarily right away saying, yes, no problem. They're saying, what are you talking about? Everything's fine. Your grades are great. You're doing well in sports. You just talk to me. Talk to your friends. You have support here.
Right.
And it's not until sometimes the third or fourth time that the parent sometimes begrudgingly brings a child into my office and is kind of pissed off at the child that they have to now have another appointment during the week that they need to, you know, drag their kid to.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that's every parent.
No, sometimes you get the flip side.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get the parent that wants the kid to go and the kid has to be dragged in. When
right.
I speak to kids, I tell them, the goal, 90% of people who go into therapy start feeling better shortly. It doesn't take a really, you know, to start getting on the right track. And if you're invested in treatment and you're not feeling better, sometimes you have to just be a consumer and figure out that it may not be the right match. But if your parents are making you go and you're not really invested, then it's nobody's fault but your own if you're not feeling better. And I think the flip side is true with parents. Like, when you deal with substances, parents are very quick to say, and I always tell this to the kids when I speak, they will say, you were hanging out with the wrong people. But when you look at mental health, then they're like, are people going to think that there's somebody else in the family who's got mental health issues? And that's the part that we have to let go of. Everybody's got something. And if you take that little facet that may not be triggering exactly right, and you learn skills to cope and manage, or if you need medication with therapy, then you go on that path. That's how you learn to manage. To take substances and self-medicate that, that's where you get into real trouble, because the treatment model doesn't really work right now.
Absolutely. All right. I can't thank you enough. We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about teens and young adults, and in terms of co-occurring disorders, we're also going to be speaking a little more about the different basic categories of co-occurring disorders and a little bit more about stress success and teenage setbacks, a workshop that is coming up on April 4th. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Sunshine giving way to increasing clouds this afternoon, 44 to 48. Mostly cloudy tonight, 32 to 36. Becoming partly sunny, milder tomorrow, low to mid-50s. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny, breezy, much colder, 30 to 35. And sunny, cold, 35 Thursday. Partly sunny on Friday with a high near 45. And more clouds, afternoon showers on Saturday. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwiman, and that's your Weather Center forecast from 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
The Greenwich Sentinel Foundation's mission is to bring together and celebrate our community. That's why the Greenwich Sentinel Foundation supports this show on our hometown radio station, 1490 WGCH, and why we email every single day the top 5 things to do today in Greenwich. We welcome new residents with our welcome basket and keep the Greenwich calendar at greenwichcalendar.org. And of course, we support the Greenwich Sentinel newspaper. You can learn more at GreenwichSentinel.com. And thank you for your support.
Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler. Join us every weekday on this station between 4 and 6 o'clock p.m. Hey, if you're thinking about it, we're talking about it. We're listening to what's happening in our community, and we want to hear from you as well. We talk politics, science, and the arts. We consult with experts, and we want your opinion. So join us every weekday. I'm Lisa Wexler right here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Good afternoon and welcome back. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. I'm here this afternoon with Stephanie Marcusano, and she is the founder and of the Harris Project, a program that is an educational program in regards to co-occurring disorders. And what I'd like to do as we are returning to our listeners is really to go into detail about the 3 basic categories of co-occurring disorders. So if you could speak to those categories, that would be great.
Absolutely. So it's interesting for me, you know, when I talked earlier about sort of integrating treatment, we put together a roundtable last April. Now, I had already started talking about the categories of co-occurring disorders, but once I started working with experts, I realized that even the mom intuition about what creates this was right on point. So everything that I talk about now, and I always want to preface the fact that I am not a professional. This is, you know, the same way your kids do their research projects. That's how I came to this point. So the three basic categories of co-occurring disorders are, the biggest one is those who have a mental health disorder and use substances in a misguided attempt to self-medicate. So that's the category that Harris fit into. I will tell you that one of my least favorite words is addict. I don't know any other disease or disorder that carries such negative connotations. And so, you know, I always say they misuse substances. Even under the truest definition of addict, most professionals never called Harris somebody who is addicted to substances. They truly believe that he went from substance to substance in a misguided attempt to just quiet his head and feel better, sort of the opposite of what a party would look like.
And just to clarify again, for our listeners who may have just joined us, for Harris, it was ADHD and anxiety disorder?
Correct. The anxiety started when he was 3. They're not even sure if it was truly ADHD, because the things that he was comfortable with, he didn't look like he had ADHD. And
got
so
it.
Some young people are diagnosed with ADHD when really it's an anxiety disorder that kind of just, you know, is masked. So, yeah, but for him, the anxiety really led the ship. But for other young people, it could be depression, bipolar disorder, PTSD, ADHD, you know, other things that are firing. Sometimes it's trauma-based. So it's always important to know what may have driven somebody to the substances. The other group is those who literally have a mental health disorder and a substance use disorder. So when you think about co-occurring, it's truly the balancing between the two. And then there are others. And, you know, when I speak to the kids, they think that they can tune out at that point because they're like, oh, I don't have a mental health issue and that's not me. But then I get to the third category and then they realize that really it applies to everybody. Sometimes just using substances in the developing brain will cause brain changes that will make you look like you have a mental health disorder.
Yes, absolutely.
And so your treatment needs to be the same as those with co-occurring disorders, because that mental health piece often then leads the ship. So even if you didn't qualify as somebody for co-occurring disorders based on being led there by mental health, sometimes just the introduction of the substances can do that.
I absolutely concur. And last week we did a show on trauma, and in that show we talked a little bit about how the use of things, substances such as ecstasy or Molly, are really changing the brain patterns. And so you're seeing a difference in terms of the levels of happiness, of joy, and depression really
right.
starting as a result of the use of those substances. And there's so much scientific research out there now that speaks to that so clearly.
Right. And the other topic that I speak to young people about is marijuana use. You know, I tell them, I don't want to debate legalization with you. I'm going to tell you two things. The first thing is, 2 weeks before Harris died, we were on the phone. I was in the parking lot at Stu Leonard's, and he basically had his phone but was on the street having been kicked out of a program. And he said, had I never started smoking marijuana, had I understood how bad that was for my anxiety and that it often made me feel worse, I would have been on a completely different path. Had I just focused on what was going on, I would have been in a different place.
I can't tell you how many kids come into my office and say, I'm using marijuana almost medicinally in order to handle and deal with my anxiety. And when I get to the point where I have that child clean for 3 months, 100% of the time, every child and young adult has turned around and said, I didn't realize it, Beth. We couldn't medicate my anxiety disorder because I was increasing my anxiety by my marijuana use, even though I knew the, you know, 20 different kinds of pot, and I knew which one was better for anxiety and which one would be more agitating. Even though I was scientifically researching this on the web and I thought I knew everything, I was wrong.
And that's 100% correct. And those are the light bulb moments again when I speak to kids, because I would never make up something, you know, that my dead son said to me, and it was clear as day. We had a clear conversation. And the other thing is, marijuana use, it does increase anxiety. It can lead to psychosis, and it also lowers productivity. It's not always consistent. And so why would you introduce any substance? And so the other thing that I say to kids when I speak is, if you think that you need to do something alcohol, marijuana, any kind of substances before you go to a party, I want you to remember that I said this to you. Stop and think why. And if you're not comfortable in your own skin, if you can't go just being you, maybe you should talk to somebody and figure out what's going on. It's not like you have to mask it in order to do it. And if you're a friend of somebody, you should be the friend that says, we're not doing anything before we go to this party. And if you need to leave, I'll leave with you because I want you to be able to be comfortable going and getting out of there if you have to. Because that's really what's going to make the impact is young people empowered not just to understand, but to proactively make change. And that's really what this is all about. So I just want to, going back just quickly to the co-occurring disorders. So the other factors to think about, genetics, traumatic brain injury, biological factors, those are out there too. So, you know, somebody who may have a family history of alcoholism doesn't guarantee it, but it is something to watch out for. You know, what your ability is, what your tolerance is, you know, how it impacts you. All of those things are not things to avoid. Those are things to talk about.
Yeah. At any AA meeting that one might attend, you'll hear folks that are in recovery and they'll say from that very first sip, I found something that relieved how I felt inside. And what they're really saying is I found something to mask or medicate the underlying pain and the underlying issue, which could be a mental health issue. It could be a low self-esteem issue, whatever that might be. And I think that the way that you worded, if you're not comfortable enough and happy enough in your own skin to show up and be the life of the party, clean and sober, there's some issue there.
Right.
What I also wanted to speak to is, as we're talking, I can't help but think of my work last Friday with Rebecca Camizio from the Stanwich School on executive functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And the frontal lobe development now we know is not done at age 20. It's not done at age 25. In fact, there's new research out that's showing that it's not even really complete. The growth of the brain is not really truly 100% complete until around the age of 30. So what that says to me is you have children experimenting or seeing marijuana or alcohol use or substance abuse with harder substances or pills as this rite of passage, if you will, but yet their brain is not even there yet where it's fully developed. So it's being impacted by that marijuana use.
Right.
And marijuana in particular affects the frontal lobe issues.
Correct. I happened to listen to your show, so I was very, you know, I was very on top of that. And the other thing that's another piece of this when it comes to the parents. Sometimes they think that, like, I want them to practice before they get to college. There is no good research that says that practicing drinking is going to help you when you get to college. It's not going to keep you from becoming a binge drinker. It's only, you know, it's only going to introduce the possibility of brain changes earlier. And so, you know, clear that out of your mind. You know, what adults do, and, you know, and this is not a judgment on anybody's personal choices, you know, as legal consenting adults, but when it comes to your children, it really is important for them to understand that their brains are developing and that what you may see me do is not okay for you to do.
Well said. Well said. Now, approximately, I'm just looking at some of the notes that you presented me with, and approximately 70% of those who misuse substances have a mental health challenge or disorder. And I think you said this earlier, approximately 9.2 million people have co-occurring disorders, yet most folks have never heard of it. Now, back in the 80s, early 90s, we would refer to that as a dual diagnosis.
Correct.
And now there's been a shift to use the term co-occurring disorders.
Right, but even when it was dual diagnosis, it didn't mean that the treatment model was any better. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it didn't really matter. But I think that, you know, SAMHSA has moved in this direction because you can have more than one mental health disorder going on at the same time. There could be a trauma component. And so it's really important to know that. And when we talk, you know, I said earlier about the 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 young people with mental health issues, it's also important for young people and parents to realize that 50% of all lifetime cases of mental illness begin by the age of 14, 75% by the age of 24. So if you're introducing substances into the mix, you are really creating quite a game of chance because without the right treatment, you're really in deep despair. I can tell you in New York State, what I've learned even recently, you know, something I really didn't understand before, there is one program from the tip of Long Island all the way to Upper Buffalo, the entire state of New York, that is an inpatient residential co-occurring program that's a BOCES program for kids 12 to 17. How can there be one program in the entire state?
And like that's run by BOCES?
It is. It's run by Outreach, but they have a BOCES component that comes in. But
BOCES does a great job.
But we're working on modeling that now in Westchester Putnam, and we're having meetings and really moving this model forward. So
wonderful, wonderful. Okay, what we're going to do is take a brief break here, and when we come back, we will be talking more about CODA and stress success and teenage setbacks. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Sunshine giving way to increasing clouds this afternoon, 44 to 48. Mostly cloudy tonight, 32 to 36. Becoming partly sunny, milder tomorrow, low to mid-50s. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny, breezy, much colder, 30 to 35. And sunny, cold, 35 Thursday. Partly sunny on Friday with a high near 45. And more clouds, afternoon showers on Saturday. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwiman, and that's your Weather Center forecast from 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Listen to Anything Goes with Kim Burns. I'm Kim Burns.
And I'm co-host Meredith Bach, and we are live every Thursday at 11 a.m.
Join us for original comic news and entertainment and top-notch interviews and up-to-the-minute topics.
Join us and hear various co-hosts for far-reaching expertise on endless topics when you need to be in the know.
That's Anything Goes with Kim Burns, Thursday mornings at 11, 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com anywhere.
Good afternoon and welcome back, Greenwich. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. I am here this afternoon with Stephanie Marcusano, and she is at the Harris Project. She is also the founder of CODA, a wonderful program for our youth that started here in Greenwich and now has spread out across the area to Briarcliff, Harrison, Irvington, plus several others that we will mention later on in the show. I want to remind folks that on April 4th, Tuesday evening at 6 p.m., it goes for 2 hours at Arch Street, is the third Stress, Success, and Teenage Setbacks. This one focused on the athlete. It's Mind, Body, and Sport, Understanding the Student Athlete. And we'll have several keynote speakers, including Stephanie Marcusano, and that will be at Arch Street. It's a wonderful event for both teens and for parents, and there's complimentary food and refreshments. We've had huge turnouts at Arch Street and then at Bruce Museum for the last two, and we're very much looking forward to this coming one that's really focused on athletes. So, Stephanie, can you speak a bit to the Harris Project and how the Harris Project has, we understand now how it's come into being, but what has the Harris Project been able to do?
Okay, so there's the big integration advocacy piece, which, as I said, is sort of the slow-moving mountain that is building momentum, which is very exciting. But as I also talked about, I needed really the motivation to get out of bed every day, and nothing made me happier than being with young people. And so I developed a program. As a former PTA president, I was somebody who used to bring programs in, and you know, everybody feels really good about it when they do it, but they're usually very static. You bring somebody in, they do what they do, they're in, they're out, and it's over. My goal was to create a program that stayed, that resonated. And so in the beginning, I would bring in the Harris Project program, 45-minute PowerPoint Q&A, and I needed to get my feet wet. I needed to get comfortable doing it. I needed to put together a focus group of young people to figure out what worked, what didn't work. And then I wanted it to really become something that was entrenched. So the most amazing, two amazing things happened. One was the head of student assistant services in Westchester lived in Ardsley. And we knew each other through the years. And she asked to get together. And we started talking about what I could do. At that point, I thought I was too new at this. I didn't think that I was ready to start becoming a firm program. So I said, I'm not ready yet, in a little bit. In the meantime, I got connected to Greenwich. Somebody brought me to a marketing event. I brought my stuff, and I met a mom. And that mom was the parent of two kids at Greenwich High School. I wasn't there about students. I was there about adults. She brought my stuff home. Her daughters read it. And they said, can we start a Harris Project Club at Greenwich High School? And she emailed me. And over Christmas break, not this past year, but the year before, she got together. We all met at City Limits with my daughter, and we started talking about what could happen. They set up a meeting with the administration. They were told that, just like with, like, you couldn't have a club for Susan Komen, but you could have a club for breast cancer awareness.
Yes.
They couldn't have the Harris Project Club. And so they created CODA, Co-Occurring Disorder Awareness. They were given their chapter, you know, they were founded officially last March. We started doing the health fairs together. We were part of the sponsorship team for the stress success events. I did youth mental health first aid training with them, and they really hit the ground running. They are student advocates raising awareness. Now, I know a lot of people have heard about SAD clubs and youth-to-youth clubs, and different schools, they run differently. A lot of schools, they become sort of a cluster of at-risk kids who really support each other and do great things. CODA has a different goal. CODA's goal is to end-to-end infuse the school with a culture of understanding about mental health and substance use issues, where every kid has support from each other, knows who the resources are in their school, run events and activities around awareness and motivation. So the fact that this event coming up in Greenwich is a sports event, all the athletes are going to understand what CODA is and what their role is in it. So then flipping back to student assistance services, once CODA hit the grounds in Greenwich, Ellen Morehouse, who's the head of Student Assistance Services, and I got together. She's part of my integration team, and she said, you're ready now. And I presented to her student assistance counselors cold last summer. And now we are officially partnered with them. So we're going to be in 15 high schools with advisors and co-advisors and student assistance counselors. And our first Co-Occurring Disorder Awareness Week is April 1st through 8th.
Wonderful.
So
great,
it's really
news.
Taken off. Yes. So we've got, you know, quite the list. And I'm going to say the most amazing thing for me is that I get, you know, it's part of this club. It functions on its own. This is really student run. But all the kickoff stuff are assemblies and presentations and programs with me. And I get the incredible satisfaction of watching the light bulbs go off over everybody's heads as I'm presenting.
Yeah.
The kids, you know, you walk in and the teacher, shut your cell phones. Nobody. And I say, you know what? If they're not interested in what I'm talking about, let them play with their phones. I've never had, two girls in one school looked at their phones for like the first half a minute, and then everybody's fully engaged.
Sure.
Part of my programs at alternative high schools, St. Christopher's Inc., which is a residential treatment facility. They're all embracing the message from, you know, from your AP Psych kids all the way through. It resonates with all of them.
That's wonderful. Well, you know what I would ask you then? The week of April, I believe it's April 3rd, I have a guest speaker coming in. Perhaps I could have you bring some of the CODA kids in for 15 minutes to talk on the air about their experience being part of CODA.
That would be awesome. I just know that I'm at New Rochelle High School, so I have to figure out what the schedule is. So just so everybody out there knows, because I don't know how far your reach is, we're going to be in Briarcliff, Greenwich, Harrison, Hendrick Hudson, Irvington, John Jay, Lakeland, New Rochelle, Walter Panis, Pelham, Pleasantville, Putnam, Northern Westchester, Bosie's, Fox Meadow, Somers, Yorktown Heights, and St. Christopher's, which for me, considering the first club was founded last March, it's been an incredible year. We're currently in the next round for the Impact 100 grant in Westchester, which if we get the award, it's $85,000. Our goal is, and what we're really going for is CODA, the toolkit in a box, so that any school that has us gets one full year of programming in that box with all of the activities, all of the campaigns, all of the supporting materials, and everything they need
terrific.
To run it.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, tell us a little bit more about CODA.
Okay. So, completely student-driven effort. It's designed to empower young people to impact the way that society looks at mental health and substance use. It's like a two-part thing. So there's the one piece, which is, what do I do every day for my own mental health and wellness? But what do I do every day besides just me? So much that you see right now is a Facebook campaign, a hashtag campaign. Those are just like those one-and-done programs. It doesn't cause you to actually do anything. You feel good about it, but it doesn't change anything. The goal of this is to really be in charge of the educational component, be part of the team to plan panels and presentations. What's so great in Greenwich is that every meeting that I go to with you guys, if it's an adult program, the kids are still at the table. If it's a kid program, there are adults at the table. It is critical for everybody to be on the same page. There's also a community component. There's the component for store owners. You know, the store owners that complain that kids are hanging out. You know, what can you do to change your conversation? What can you do to be a support for those kids who may not know where else to go? It's partnering with other organizations and clubs. This is not like CODA's running an event. Go Green, you know, for the Co-Occurring Disorder Awareness Week is for everybody in the school. The announcements will be coming every day this year. The activities are designed, particularly the first year, to really raise awareness. If you didn't get to hear me speak, then you'll have no idea because nobody really knows what this is. Young people are becoming leaders to spread the message and to spread the word.
Got it.
And then the bigger piece is, well, the biggest piece, I guess, is if you're somebody, you know, a young person who's interested in public policy, health, there are going to be CODA leadership summits so that you can meet with legislators, you can meet with departments, you know, commissioners, departments of community of mental health to really talk about how this lack of treatment and understanding is really impacting you and your generation. I always say 10 or 15 years ago, nobody knew what autism was unless you had a child in your family with autism. 1 in 58 children are diagnosed with autism. Everybody knows what it is now because of the hard work of parents.
Exactly right.
This is the plague of this generation, co-occurring disorders. If young people can be empowered to really take this on and make a difference, they can move mountains.
Exactly. Now, I noticed that you say go green. It's a go green campaign. Is everyone wearing green?
Everybody's wearing green. Okay. So the whole, you know, the Harris Project, our logoing, because your listeners can't see it, our Harris Project logoing is all black, white, and green. The true green is actually color matched to Harris's eyes. That was how the whole logo was originally designed. And we really, our ribbons, you know, we don't have a big budget. So our ribbons this year are stickers. They're green and white. And, you know, because mental health awareness is just green, we're really going with green and white to really differentiate co-occurring disorders. And the young people are so excited to really start, you know, playing building a compassion wall out of Post-its. That's like our first activity because it's not expensive. Having a fishbowl of facts and information and getting, you know, a Harris Project bracelet or a pin or something just for answering the questions right. And honestly, one of my best moments was watching the kids from CODA at Greenwich at the health fair, I guess it was in the fall, literally talking about co-occurring disorders with their peers.
Right.
And
right.
So that's, you know, an amazing opportunity.
Oh, it's unbelievable that you're reaching the kids at that level. And that's what I thought was so fascinating in October when I was a part of that workshop, was sitting there and listening to children get up and tell their real story. This is what it was like for me growing up, knowing one child shared that they had lost a parent.
Right.
But that they were going through 9th and 10th grade with no one in the classroom, not even their teachers, knowing that their mom had just passed away.
Right.
And they were getting up every day just struggling to wake up and get it together to get to school. But knowing that rather than to turn to substance abuse to medicate that pain, that there is help out there before you go to that step.
Correct.
And if you do go to that step, that there's still help out there for you to deal with the underlying issue, which
right.
is
and that student didn't
loss.
Have substance use issues. You know, there were other poor coping mechanisms. You know, when you think about young people, suicide is the second leading cause of death for teenagers. You know, this is all part of the same conversation. Cutting is something, you know, a coping mechanism. It's not, you know, it's not something that's necessarily leading to suicide, but it's a poor coping mechanism because you can't talk about what's going on. And so all of this is really designed to bridge the conversation between mental health and substance use, that it's not one or the other. You can have a club that speaks to both. You can have a movement that speaks to both.
Right. And getting high-functioning kids who are, you know, some of our kids who are getting the top grades and getting into the top universities have struggled with anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, cutting, using substances, and that you can't just look at a group or a room full of 25 kids, and there's no way that we as adults could look at a group of kids and know
right.
who's cutting at home each night, who is you know, going into the bathroom and just sobbing their eyes out than coming out and pretending everything's fine.
Right. And so that's, you know, and that's one of the biggest things is that I always start, you know, my presentations with the slideshow that Harris's friends put together for his funeral. And I don't do it to put the kids off. I do it because I want them to see that he was everybody and anybody. He was an athlete. He was a musician. He had friends of every race, creed, and color. You know, he had friends younger, friends older. You would never have been able to pick him out in the crowd. And I think that that's important for kids to know. The other thing, you know, people always say to me, you know, are there more instances of stress and anxiety in today's generation of kids? And I always, you know, I came up with this analogy. I like always tell this story and it just seems to work. And I think that people just get it. Back in the olden days, a kid who was like a big strapping kid who might have ADHD was out plowing the fields. An introspective, kind of quiet kid who wasn't so socially competent might become the village doctor. The person like me who's comfortable chatting and talking, I would probably be running the village store. But each and every one of those people were critical to that village running. Now we take our kids and oftentimes we try to put them in the smallest of boxes, or they think that they have no value unless they're in that box themselves. And that really limits them. You know, the goal is to let kids learn and get the right help and treatment to manage those facets that aren't firing perfectly, but to embrace the wonderful things that are going great for them and really let them explore those opportunities.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. We're going to take a very brief break and be right back. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com, anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Sunshine giving way to increasing clouds this afternoon, 44 to 48, mostly cloudy tonight, 32 to 36. Becoming partly sunny, milder tomorrow, low to mid-50s, and on Wednesday, mostly sunny, breezy, much colder, 30 to 35, and sunny, cold, 35 Thursday. Partly sunny on Friday with a high near 45 and more clouds, afternoon showers on Saturday. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwiman, and that's your Weather Center forecast from 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
We invite you to listen this Tuesday morning at 9:30 for an enlightening show, Good Living with Michelle Thomas. It'll bring a smile to your face, a few laughs, and the warmth of knowing how fortunate we are. Michelle will discuss topics that highlight good living for those in their golden years and caring for aging parents. We invite you to listen to Good Living with Michelle Thomas this Tuesday morning at 9:30 on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon and welcome back. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com from anywhere. I'm here with Stephanie Marcusano of CODA, the founder of CODA, as well as the Harris Project. And I just want to remind folks that you can find out more about stress success and teenage setbacks. I will be posting all of the information later this afternoon on my Be Well with Beth O'Malley Wellness fan page on Facebook. So go ahead and log on to Facebook and like Be Well with Beth, and you can follow my events and my shows there. April 4th, Tuesday, coming up from 6 to 8 p.m. It's open for both teens and parents, and there will be complimentary food and refreshments. Now, for Stephanie, she will also be putting that information up on her website. And Stephanie, can you give us where folks can get in touch with you?
Sure. So the easiest way to email me is just at theharrisproject@aol.com, because, yes, I still have AOL. And the other thing is our webpage is really not something that's been updated, so basic information is there. The place that I would really direct people is to our Facebook page. So we are the Harris Project. And if you are putting it in, it would be www.facebook.com/theharrisprojectcod.
Now, I'll tell you, I follow you on Facebook as a person, Beth, and not as my professional
right.
site. And I find it amazing how much you're doing. And that being following you there really gives me all of the information that I need.
Yes. So I update, you know, community events, parent events, panels, workshops, just presentations. And if you want me to come to your community, you know, if you're not a Greenwich person and you're, you know, somewhere else, I'm happy to come.
Okay, great. Now, we also will be posting this show, and I will share it with you to the Harris Project Facebook page. But for folks who missed the beginning of the segment, it's available at O'MalleyWellness.com. My website, but also at the Be Well with Beth Facebook page. So that will be available, and I'll have the audio tape up there as well. Well, this has been a wonderful show. I can't thank you enough for coming on and speaking to the issues. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Support for this program has been generously donated by the Greenwich Sentinel Foundation and listeners like you.
The Voice of Greenwich. This is 1490 WGCH Greenwich.
Special report, Comey on wiretaps in Russia. I'm Chaz Henry. On Capitol Hill today, FBI Director James Comey told the House Intelligence Committee that the Bureau nor any other component of the Justice Department has seen any evidence to support President Trump's claim that former President Obama ordered the wiretapping of Trump Tower last year. Correspondent Bob Costantini.
At the White House, spokesman Sean Spicer was sticking to the line about news reports revealing one-time Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn had conversations.